Hello and welcome to
Oh wow, we're going into it. That was it.
Okay, you would say it's that.
You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 454 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you from different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. And in honor of those Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, it's, of course, the Bobby Wagner edition.
It's very sad that when I looked at 54 at first, for some reason, Bobby Wagner did not. See, we're going to have a discussion about Indy
Chris
athletes.
Wilcox? Wait, is Chris Wilcox?
Chris Wilcox is. He wasn't even him.
Who came to mind?
You know who came to mind for me? Goose Gossage. His brief cameo for the Seattle Mariners during, I want to say, the 1994 season. Formative stuff.
1 year?
I don't think it was more than 1 year.
Goose Gossage was, like, important, I feel like, to our childhoods. Maybe it's because his name was Goose.
I mean, he is one of the greatest relievers of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Some things so. They'll put anybody in there, I've heard recently.
Okay. Yeah, so, he had a pretty solid 94.7 war for the Mariners.
Speaking of what we'll talk about later about finding something interesting about athletes, do you want to know whose perspective on almost anything I don't want to know?
Who's that?
Goose Gossage's.
Oh, you have some concerns?
Not interested in hearing his opinion on most things.
Handlebar mustaches?
Sure, that's fine.
All right, well, we're not actually here to discuss
still
Goose
alive, still alive, Goose
opinions.
Not interested. Don't want to know. Hope I don't know.
Exactly. Felt that way about certain Seattle athletes during the past week. We're not going to get into it.
Wait.
Did you miss this whole thing?
Which athlete?
The quarterback of your Seattle Seahawks.
Oh. Reposting Ron DeSantis?
Yes. Again, we're not going to get into it. Okay. But you know what we are going to get into is some toasts. And we're going to start with a toast for Jason Peters, who announced his retirement after, depending on how you count the 2012 season where he was injured with an Achilles rupture, 20 full years in the NFL, played 19 seasons. Or 21, I guess, because he didn't technically play a game last year for the Seahawks when he was on the practice squad for them, but has retired to join the team in the official position, the capacity of veteran mentor.
I love the title. When I first saw this, I was kind of like, is this the Seahawks news to give? I know that he happened to have finished his career on the Seahawks, but like, it felt to me a little bit like, the Seahawks should not be the one delivering this news.
I mean, obviously, like, he's going to be most associated with the Philadelphia Eagles, where he played 12 seasons and made, counting this off the top of my head here, 7 of his 9 Pro Bowls.
It became Seahawks news because of the title of veteran mentor.
Correct.
And they just, like I said, just add it to the coaching staff. Just throw him on there.
Let's
Jason
do it.
Peters. Yeah.
If you're going to... This is much better than the director of foresight and insight for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just like, what is he? He's a veteran mentor. So let's call it like it is.
I am so sorry to say, I have looked at Goose Gossage's Wikipedia page.
Oh no, why did you do it?
I think I already knew this about Goose Gossage. But like, even if I didn't already know this about Goose Gossage,
I knew this about Goose Gossage.
Anyway. He has also openly criticized the Black Lives Matter movement and organization as well. Due to these comments and continuous criticism of New York Yankees players, especially Mariano Rivera, wonder why.
Oh, of course.
And front office executives such as Brian Cashman and Hal Steinbrenner, Gossage has been disinvited from Yankees spring training and other events such as Old Timers Day.
Yeah, but thank God he didn't have a beard.
Imagine being so problematic, you've been disinvited from Old Timers Day.
Oh boy. So again, it's the Bobby Wagner edition of the podcast. And you know what?
I thought of Goose Gossage.
I can't explain why my brain works the way it does, except that it's wired.
I bet there's nothing about, look, Chris Wilcox, I could read his Wikipedia page. I maybe shouldn't say this right now. I think it's gonna be fine.
I don't, I'm not familiar with any. He has not been uninvited from Sonic's Old Timers Day if we ever put one of those together, to my knowledge, I would say. There is nothing about Chris Wilcox after his NBA retirement.
That's great. That is everything that I want to know about Chris Wilcox. That's it. I
Wheezy.
don't need to know any other information about Chris Wilcox. I have completed it. Like that is it. We've completed the cycle on Chris Wilcox information that I am looking for. We're good. Period.
So again, congrats to Jason Peters on his role with the Seattle.
He play for the Thunder?
Chris Wilcox, I believe he, no, I guess he didn't. He was traded that, no, yeah, he
It
did
says
play
till
one season,
2009.
yeah, and then he
Okay.
was traded in the summer of two or in at the 2009 trade deadline, yes, for Malik Rose.
Do we feel like who won this trade? Let's go back and grade it. Have we
The Chris
regraded this trade?
Wilcox, Vladimir Radmonovich trade?
Yeah, because I mean, I always liked Chris Wilcox, but you know, Vladdy has a special place in my and your and a special member. Third Pelton brother? Yes.
I don't think we've ever had Damon on the pod, believe it or not, which we should certainly.
Good friend of the pod. Damon's heart. Let's regrade that trade.
Well, the thing is, Vladimir Radmonovich, whatever you think of his merits as a player, was not going to re-sign with the Sonics after taking the qualifying offer. It's very rare that players do re-sign in that situation. And he was only playing 23 minutes per game in 2005-06 after averaging 29.5 in 2004-05 when he finished fifth in sixth man of the year voting and first in wearing braids during the playoffs. So, you know, it was time to move on from Vlade Radmanovic, and getting Chris Wilcox for him, I think, was still a solid return for the Sonics. You know what I'd have to say?
B plus.
Solid B plus.
What about for the Clippers?
I don't. He did not re-sign with the Clippers. He was only there the final 30 games that season. Now they were. This was actually the Clippers loading up for their playoff run. You'll recall because that was the year that they won. They beat Denver in the first round of the playoffs and lost to Phoenix in, I want to say, seven games in the second round of the playoffs. Vladdy bumped his minutes up to 29.5. There, shot 42% from three. In the playoffs, 8.1 points per game. Got two starts off the bench. So you know what? Let's make it a full round of B pluses.
No, that's not the thing about trade grades. It's not a regrade from the past. I want to grade it in the process
I mean,
as you would.
yeah,
You still think it would have been a B plus across the board?
I don't remember what I thought about Chris Wilcox in 2006.
I remember kind of liking the deal.
I mean, we
Despite
were,
the fact that we loved Vladdy, I kind of liked the deal.
yeah, because again, we knew he was moving on, and the Sonics certainly did need a more traditional power forward presence. I mean, wow, he played way less than I realized. He was averaging 4.5 points per game at the time of the trade.
Chris
But
Wilcox
yeah, came
for
to
the Clips.
Seattle and averaged 14.1 and 8.2 rebounds per game the rest of the season.
I mean, he was an important enough player here that he has that bobblehead right there. So
That is true. You cannot take away the Chris Wilcox bobblehead.
the fact that
And
there's Nick
believe me,
Collison, Kevin Durant, and
people
Chris
have
Wilcox,
tried. I've
that
tried
is
to give them away.
the complete set of the year. One of them was Kevin Durant, and another one of them was Chris Wilcox.
And another of them has his jersey retired in Oklahoma City, but that's not what we're here to discuss.
He's seen Stepbrothers. He's literally the person I was talking about. I didn't realize we'd get there, but he was literally the person I was talking about, where they were like, he's such a movie buff. He's seen Spider-Man 2 and kind of liked it.
It's a dumb joke is so funny, but it is.
It's because it's true.
I mean, the specificity of Step Brothers in particular, I guess, is what I'm confused about. All right, congrats to Stevie
Have
Hansen. He
you
threw in.
read graded, by the way, the Kemp trade? Kemp, Terrell Brandon, Sam Cassell.
Yeah, we did that on the podcast. We talked about it. Oh,
What did
we
we?
talked about the Gary Payton, Vin
I
Baker
was gonna say
retrade.
we re.
So, all right. Well, we should pause because we didn't talk about this last week. We had too much to get to. Not that we don't have a lot to get to this week, but we'll go through it quickly. So
Apparently,
the
we didn't even do the Kraken section. Is that right?
No, I think I mentioned it. There wasn't a lot there.
Okay.
There's not going to be a lot there the rest of the season, I got to be honest with you, except unless they make some trades before the deadline, which is March 7th. The Storm held an event at their headquarters on All-Star Sunday for Native American youth with Rise Above, the local organization founded by former Division I basketball player Jackie McCormick. And in attendance is veteran mentors were both Sean Kemp and
And
Vin
Jason
Baker.
Peters. Oh.
Yeah, I didn't even put together them. The veteran mentor had incepted its way into my brain. So Kemp and Baker, the players were traded for each other, and it was kind of fascinating to see them in the same place. They also did an event together at the Edgewater that Monday night that I wasn't able to attend. But it kind of interesting to get their perspective, and they said that they had kind of a mutual respect when they played against each other and did connect after they were traded for each other. Like Kemp wasn't going to Milwaukee, so it wasn't exactly one of those situations like where you're going to swap houses or something. But Baker got some notes on what to expect in Seattle from Sean Kemp, and sounds like they've stayed
Just
in touch to
directions
a...
to the keg.
Oh no, they stayed in touch since then and have developed a closer friendship over the last year or so. So it was really fun.
So you've regraded on the PeltonCast that exact trade?
I have.
Okay, not just the Gary Payton trade.
Yes, we can link to that one again.
Okay.
But
We'll find some other trades to regrade today. Don't worry.
do we have that many that we have that little on the rundown? Anyways, cool event. It was great to see everyone. Joyce Walker, the legendary Garfield High School product, also in attendance in that one. So you had some real Seattle basketball fixtures. Returning to the toast, congrats to Stevie Hansen, who threw a no-hitter for UW softball against UC Riverside in the Marietta Classic and came within an error in the first inning of a perfect game. It was the second career no-hitter for Hansen, who threw one with Oregon in 2023 against Utah Valley. And then lastly this week, we're saying a farewell, a happy trails to Diana Taurasi, who announced her retirement from the WNBA as the league's all-time leading scorer on Tuesday. And I wanted to pose to you a question. Is Diana Taurasi Seattle's greatest sports villain in the player category? Like Jim Harbaugh's a little different. Like one of the things we've talked about on the podcast is what a fun player Charles Barkley was to root against in the 1990s because he
I feel
was.
like I didn't participate in this enough to exactly know if Diana Taurasi. I mean, I think probably the simplest answer is no, but I don't know exactly who else it would be, if that
Well,
makes
well,
sense.
great. I've got some other candidates for
Okay,
you, but
let's hear your other
well, let me
Seattle sports
talk
villains.
you through the Diana Taurasi case first. I mean,
Okay, sure.
obviously, I was there front and center. I was thinking that I undoubtedly have seen Diana Taurasi play more than any other WNBA player who didn't play for the Storm, and there's a reason for that. No other player has played more games against the Storm. No other player has played more playoff games against the Storm. She played 14 of them. Those are also her most playoff games or total game, regular season games against any opponent. So this definitely was a classic rivalry. You had the super Diana Taurasi element where these two are best friends, played together in college, continued to play together on the national team, but competed repeatedly in the playoffs, had some classic matchups, some very memorable ones. I've talked about, with Sue, one of my all-time favorite memories was completing the sweep in 2010 in the conference finals en route to the WNBA title that year. Obviously, the 2018 classic five-game semifinals between these two teams. That one you remember, right?
Kind of.
I mean, that was such a big deal. And Diana Taurasi at that point had never lost an elimination, a gate or
I kind of remember that, yeah, that
a
she never lost.
winner-take-all game.
Yeah.
She lost a large number of elimination games, including that 2010, but she had never lost a winner-take-all game until the Storm beat Phoenix in game five of that series en route to their third title. So, it's weird. Neither of those are the memory about Diana Taurasi in the playoffs that stands out the most to me. The most is because one of the cool things about this was at Key Arena, the media section was directly, it was on the baseline next, like, at a 45 degree angle, or at a right angle, I should say, from the visitor bench. So Diana Taurasi, the entire game, is right in front of us, and we can hear like everything she's saying on that end of the court to the referees and everything, which obviously
What
is
is she
very
saying to the
profane.
referees?
I mean, she's screaming at them the entire time. And
Okay.
so one of my distinguished, my most distinct memory is 2011 Phoenix Seattle series, which went to three games, went the distance, game three in Seattle. And Diana actually fouled out of that game. And weirdly, it's like a highlight for her wife, Penny Taylor, who helped lead Phoenix to the victory, knock off the Storm. is the defending champions in that game. But just like how exciting it was for Diana Taurasi to foul out and like what it meant. Like that to me is one of the singular memories. Like to a degree, I think we'll talk, one of the other players we'll talk about on this list. So, I mean, but again, like personality, one of the all-time greats, competed against a lot against the Seattle team, competed against the, a lot against the Seattle team with stuff at stake in terms of, WNBA finals and things like that. I think she checked every box as
Okay.
a sports
I
villain.
mean, it makes sense, the Storm being they were in the playoffs for a long period of time. They're a very good team for a long period of time. Basically, the entire time period that Diana Taurasi was a star, the Storm were in the mix
Yeah, and
through kind
obviously
of
it's a
two
smaller
generations.
league, so
Ex
you're more
exactly.
likely to play against each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like juiced in that way that if you have two teams that are good, you're going to end up playing each other quite a bit. I mean, especially with basically it was Sue Bird's tenure and Diana Taurasi's tenure, where they competed with each other
Exactly.
at the exact same time because they mirrored each other so closely. So I think that makes sense. I mean,
Oh, and also forgot to mention Diana Taurasi's last regular season game, her last game in Phoenix, ended up being against the Storm, very fittingly. Two of her last three regular season games, I think, maybe two or two of the last four. So that was kind of appropriate too.
It's harder for me because the amount of these games that I actually watched was so few that I'm not. I remember going and seeing Diana Taurasi occasionally.
That's why you're going to pick Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. At no point did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cross my mind as greatest. It's funny, like most of the other people that we're talking about, it's one moment. And so I'm curious to hear who you're thinking of because to me, it's very, very few moments. They're just big magnitude moments.
And that's not necessarily the approach I took, so it'll be interesting to
No,
see if you mention some
I
different
think
ones.
that's good to take a different approach because the people who I've most been like, oh, I hate that person because of this. It's like they did one thing, but that one thing was so bad.
So Kareem played more regular season games against the Sonics than any other player did, obviously.
Was Kareem ever known as like a Sonics foil?
Well, Kareem was just the rival of everyone, as the Lakers are the
Exactly.
rival of
That's the other
everyone.
thing. Like Brady, like the Seahawks had moments being competitive with Brady, but he's fucking Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, I did not even consider Tom Brady, I gotta tell you.
well, I mean, there's obviously
They just didn't play him enough.
but there's the You Mad Bro. They did
Yeah.
lose to them in the Super Bowl, famously, I actually heard,
I heard he got canceled.
and had a couple of his probably greatest drives ever during that game. And then they came back, beat them the game, the CJ ProSize game after that, and then played him a handful of other times. So there were probably enough games, but at the same time, Tom Brady is a villain to everybody,
Yeah, he doesn't belong to Seattle.
and that's the same way that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is, like Kareem. Played for so long and played at such a high level. Again, the league was smaller as well. Kind of villain to all.
All right, let's go team by team. So the other Sonics candidates, Charles Barkley, as I mentioned, definitely stood out in our childhood. Also, Hakeem Olajuwon, who actually played the most playoff games of anyone against the Sonics.
I never felt that kind of hate toward Akeem,
Well, it's never that, but like that sense of, oh, Taurasi's off the court, we have to take advantage of that. Like that, in particular in the 93 series against the Rockets that went seven games,
Did they
like
ever
so
play them?
palpable.
They never play them to go to a final. It was always the
Always
second
round two.
round or so.
93, 96, and 97. As well as 87, they played in the conference semifinals. And I think there was a first round series, and I want to say 89.
And there weren't any great series in there, right?
No, 93 was the seven game series, and
That
it was
was 90,
close all the way.
93 was a great series.
And
But
97
then.
was a seven game series too. It just didn't feel as much about Olajuwon because Houston also had Charles Barkley.
That was the year after, right?
Correct.
It never felt I don't that series never felt that competitive. I always felt like I remember being there in the moment, being like, "Sonics are gonna lose the series,"
Well, I didn't feel that way.
but the fact that waiting after them in that '93 series was Charles Barkley, and that Charles Barkley kind of spans multiple different ones, it
He
feels
was the
like
final boss.
Charles was ahead of Hakeem in there.
But the other
I thought.
90s candidate, it has to be collectively, is Malone and Stockton.
That's what I was going to say is I feel like Karl Malone was the one who came to mind to me. The other one I thought of for the Sonics was Dikembe because
I
Dikembe
mean,
has
it's
the
just the
most
one series.
but it's the most iconic negative moment in probably up there in Seattle sports history, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that he
I don't think people
basically
are like upset at Dikembe. I mean, that image
Jan
being
Jan
iconic.
hated Dikembe Mutombo. Do you remember that?
I remember mom really loving Dikembe Mutombo.
Oh, she was so mad about him rolling on the floor with the basketball.
Certainly, but I think the biggest villain in Seattle was George Karl.
I think you're underestimating how mad people were at Dikembe, but it was kind of like those centers, the Western Conference centers or big men of the 90s. But I do think Stockton and Malone.
Weirdly, David Robinson, not even a little bit.
Not concerned at all with David Robinson.
Never played in the playoffs in the 90s.
Totally
They played
fine with him.
in 02 in his second to last season.
Okay.
All right, Seahawks candidates. Aaron Donald. You're poo-pooing that? Like,
I'm not poo-pooing it, but
he's legendary for wrecking the Seahawks offense.
I know. That was one where it was more like, maybe it's because I was older while it was happening, but it's just like, it's almost impressive.
Of course,
like,
but that's
rather
not
than,
my.
I never
I don't think.
hated, he wasn't a villain in the same way. It's just like, come on, y'all. Like, the only thing that I ever felt about Aaron Donald was, how did the Seahawks not draft Aaron
I
Donald?
don't know. They did not have a chance to draft Aaron Donald, as it turns out.
They could have. They could have traded in that pick easily.
I mean, I suppose so.
Just don't forget this. There's a whole decade of counting some mistakes, including the name of this podcast or the number of this podcast that John Schneider has made. And I'm tacking Aaron Donald onto the list. They probably said after that they liked him.
I'm sure they did. Yeah. The other person I had on here was John Elway in the division throughout the 80s and the 90s.
Did they ever
Like,
play any major games, though, against the
they never
Broncos?
did. I mean, if you want to lean more on playoff games, it'd have to be Marino, but he wasn't in the
Yeah.
division. I think the division is a much bigger factor in the NFL. Like, knowing that you're going to have to play this guy two times a year, every year.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of like a handful of the teams that have been the foils have spread throughout different quarterbacks and players and people like that. You know, it's been like the 40, it wasn't like Kaepernick had a super long tenure. I wonder why.
Yeah, no one knows.
As 49ers
If you were
quarterbacks,
going to pick
I
a
can't figure out why
49ers
Goose Gossage
player.
doesn't like Mariano Rivera. he was a really good closer.
Well, we'll get to that.
But
if you're going to pick a Niners player, it would probably be Frank Gore.
Yeah. But also, yeah, Frank Gore, did they ever play Frank Gore in the playoffs?
I don't think so. The Niners mostly weren't that good in the Frank Gore era, because he wasn't still around by 2000, by the NFC Championship game, was he? He couldn't have been, could he?
No, no way. You're talking about the tip?
Yeah.
No, definitely not. I mean, maybe he was, but.
No, he was still around.
He was on
Started
the
all
roster.
16 games that season.
Did he?
Frank Gore, very prolific. Like, nothing but respect to that guy, but
I
and
still
it
didn't.
was
I didn't
like,
feel the same way about him. Like
no,
what you're talking about.
he had 11 carries for 14 yards in the championship game. And then Aaron Rodgers was the other person I considered. They just didn't play him as much as you think they did.
Felt the way about Aaron Rodgers, though, similar to what I was saying about Brady, where again, it's like everybody hates Aaron Rodgers.
And that one
So.
has really aged well. But Rodgers, I think the Seahawks were a bigger rival to Rodgers than they were to Tom Brady, because they did deny him a Super Bowl. So.
I just don't, I don't feel like, I feel like Rodgers belongs too much to everybody. You know, he's got such deep NFC North rivals that you don't want it to be a situation where it's like, they don't really care about you at all. Like the Packers don't hate the Seahawks. Like,
oh, I think they do a little bit. Between the Fail Mary and the NFC Championship
sure,
game,
they hate the Seahawks.
I think
But
there's a
it's,
degree of animosity.
Okay.
As much as there probably can be in interdivision rivalry like that. My Mariners nominee was, in fact,
Mariano
Mariano
Rivera.
Rivera, as like the face of the Yankees teams that they lost to back-to-back in 2000, 2001. The only, well, no, I guess Bernie Williams, I guess, maybe, but I don't really remember which of the hitters were particularly prominent in those series.
They ended up coming back and winning the series, but Jim Leritz was the one who I was like, I
Well,
hate that
yes.
guy.
Not exactly on this level.
Those are the best ones, though, are the ones where it's not like the star player. That's what I'm saying. Like, everybody hates Aaron Rodgers, but where you just have one player for a team that you're like, I just like, they're so frustrating
Nick
to
Van
play
Exel?
against. Yes, like players like that.
Lisa Leslie was my other nominee for The Storm. Her rivalry with Lauren Jackson was a lot of fun, but just not the longevity that Diana Taurasi had, and not really the stakes. They played several times in the first round, but not in the conference finals at all. Sounders posed this one to the Discord, and they agreed it's Diego Chara for the Timbers.
I've literally never even heard of this person.
And on the NWSL side, Christine Sinclair, who I believe is now retired, but certainly had her plenty of great moments in the Reign Thorns Derby.
I think it pretty much has to be Diana Taurasi. Is there, are there any UW sports ones? Because UConn in general for basketball,
You just don't play anyone enough, and like that's part of it is Diana Taurasi. This was over 2 decades,
yeah, no,
so
it would be impossible.
it's
And the other person,
coaches in college, like
I think it's
Arba.
coaches in almost every sport, though, ultimately. Like in a lot of ways, it's still the coaches that you've faced more times because they're the ones who span. Like Jim Harbaugh is such an obvious one.
Wooden for UW men's basketball back in the day.
I was trying to think of a player from the team from down south where it's just like
Well,
that
Bo
guy.
Nix.
Yeah, we just owned him. You know what I mean?
I
Like
know.
he can't be sports villain in the same way because literally teams from Seattle beat him three consecutive times.
Four.
Four consecutive times?
They won in 2022 in Eugene.
Oh, plus the 2 times last year. Yes. Yeah, so four consecutive times beating Bo Nix.
There's
So
really
it's
just never been an even period in the Oregon-Washington rivalry.
I mean, Kenny
One
Wheaton is
side or
the
the
one.
other.
Like, Kenny Wheaton is the person who really flipped it, and he's such a god there that for, changing the face of the program,
But
that.
to go back to our discussion, how much longer do you think the Kenny Wheaton Wikipedia page goes? Like, it's just not the longevity to it.
Think
So.
probably it's better if the Wikipedia page isn't that long.
Oh, I agree. I agree. But I'm just saying, like, Kenny Wheaton, we're talking about one play. And that's not to
Yes.
me what I'm talking about. I'm talking about years
No,
of
I
going
agree.
against somebody.
I think it pretty much has to be Diana Taurasi then because of where, like, I guess I'll give Aaron Donald credit of every time you play them, you just have to factor during that time period, you had to factor in Aaron Donald. I think Kittle is a little bit the same, and it stretched for a long period of time where you're just like, of freaking course.
Kittle
You
does
know?
have the Seahawks could and probably should have drafted him. Yeah.
And they have those plays where it's like they'll hit them for a big gain. You're just like, ugh. You know, like one of those. But is there a signature Aaron Donald play against the Seahawks? It was kind of just consistent wrecking of them. It was Sue who injured when he was on the Dolphins, who injured Russ, right? It was Ndamukong Suh.
Correct. Well, Donald did was involved in Russell Wilson's injury. You're recalling when Wes had an ankle injury that he played through, but when he broke the bone on his throwing hand or whatever
The
it
year
was
that
that
Geno ended up
happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on,
His
it was
hand
against the
hit the
Rams. I'm
helmet
pretty sure it
of
was Aaron
Aaron
Donald's
Donald.
helmet. Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if I want to call that Aaron Donald's signature play. There's probably something like at the end of one of those games in LA that we're not remembering. I don't know. It's just consistent greatness for Aaron Donald.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right about Diana Taurasi being the one.
All right, before we get to food and then the roundup, did you want to talk about your experience of going to an NBA game in DC? As
No.
discussed on the Discord. Oh, you've got
I mean,
nothing
what
to
am I going to
share?
talk about? I told you earlier every thought that I have about it, but it's not really podcast material. It was, I don't know. It's fun going. My favorite thing about it, I guess I'll by in answer to my no, I'll give a yes. But you know what I was telling you
A
about
no
like
end.
you go to an event and you're like I'm going to the Sounders game later, and it's like, would I have watched the Sounders game if it wasn't happening? Probably not, but I'm going to care about it for that time of being there. And that's my favorite thing about going to like a Washington Wizards Brooklyn Nets game in Washington is you're just having fun, watching stuff, seeing a lot of replays at the end of the game. I have a handful of almost skirmishes, and then celebrating when the Wizards do something good because it's fun to pe feel like part of something for a second. I was there with ostensibly mostly Lakers fans, including myself, but we're all riding very high right now.
Let me tell you the last NBA game I attended in Portland last Thursday. I was also there with a
That
lot
one
of
was
Lakers fans.
like I was like, I think that I prefer the Lakers, but either way, I'm probably going to be happy whoever wins this game. But now that the Lakers, with the victories against Dallas in the reunion game and the victory at Denver, I'm like, this is happening, people.
Well, it's been quite a roller coaster between the Lakers lost to the Jazz in their last game before the All-Star break, lost to the Hornets the night before that game in Portland in a rescheduled game
We're
coming
back.
out of the All-Star break.
We're back.
And
That was
then
a weird game, that
they were
Hornets
good
game.
against Portland without Luka playing, but then Denver was the first time they really looked good with Luka, and that was the first time it's like, oh, okay, this might be a real thing this year.
LeBron looks like he looks so excited to play basketball again. LeBron looks like something has been awakened in him. And
But he
LeBron.
looked like that before the trade,
No, I
too.
totally agree. That win in New York, I was like,
Yeah.
LeBron feels good about playing basketball right now. And no matter what, like, they are going to be a fun team in the playoffs. You have to give, I mean, you got to give Jage a lot of credit for this as well. But like, how he is moving, like some of those plays he had last night against Dallas, I was just like, this freaking dude is 40 years old. Like, come on,
I mean,
that he's doing this.
I walked in a little bit late to the Portland game, and so I was standing in the tunnel on the opposite end of the court from where this happened, but saw him go up for a rebound to the rim, and it's like that guy's 40 years old, and he broke his own record as the oldest player to score 40 points in that game in Portland.
Oh yeah, the out hustling other players. That's the piece that LeBron was missing. And in February, that LeBron is doing that in February right now, which I hope it still lasts till the end of the year. But objectively, the NBA is a better sport when LeBron is playing well and when LeBron is in it. You know what I mean? Like, it is more fun when that is happening, and it's more fun when he's playing well. Anyway, that is unrelated to anything, but I do feel
Well, no,
like
I wanted to talk about that experience.
there's a little something happening in LA right now. In the same way that I said for Portland too, like the victory that the Blazers had over Charlotte, where they held LaMelo to 5 points on 1 of 10 shooting and won by almost 60.
I mean, I do think that with Portland and the Lakers both, there is a high degree of opponent 3-point shooting. So we'll see if that is maintained.
They had the Blazers had a couple of tough losses, like those back-to-back Denver losses were pretty tough losses. They're not quite good enough to beat teams like that, especially on the road. But I think the Blazers are good enough to beat almost any bad team and to compete with some good teams, which is a great place to be if you're Portland right now. Like, that is exactly where they want to be. They're not
You
really
know who the bad teams are they can beat?
the Washington Wizards, who they play tomorrow night.
The Brooklyn Nets, who they also play on this road trip, I'm pretty sure. Although they lost to the Nets at home after they traded many of their guys.
But it's fun to go to a game, not care that much, hang out, not have anybody around you in the seats, and
How much
just
did you
like,
pay for these tickets?
well, I know that service fees were more expensive than the tickets themselves.
That sounds about right.
They were like $4 for tickets. I mean, there were entire sections that were empty there, but it's definitely like it is a different climate and culture than being in Portland, which is awesome. And going to NBA games is fun. I asked at basketball practice yesterday. I was like,
You know
kids, I
who
went.
I'm getting to see, by the way? I'm getting to see the Lakers again in Boston next weekend.
Oh, that's going to be a huge game.
It's going to be the ABC Saturday night. I'm very excited for that.
I was like, at basketball practice, I was like, I went to an NBA game yesterday, children. I will give you 10 guesses on which teams were playing, and I bet you will not get it within 10 guesses. And they did not.
Even with the clue that they should have guessed that they wouldn't
That's
guess
what
it.
the assistant coach was like. Think of teams who are not the teams you would think of.
But
And of course,
do they know the Wizards exist?
that was another question that I had. It was like, do they know that the Wizards are a team? I am skeptical. One person claimed to have said Brooklyn, but I did not hear that. Anyway, it was fun going. I don't know.
No,
It's
that was sufficient.
fun going to professional sporting events.
I agree. Let's wrap up Lil Woody's Seattle
Strange,
Burger Month.
strange feeling in Washington, D.C. right now.
I can imagine week four with the Catahoula Burger from Eric Donnelly of Flint Creek Cattle Company. This features Tillamook white cheddar cheese, red eye barbecue sauce, which was not a thing I had heard of before, but noticed is on the menu at Arthur's when we went there for brunch over the weekend. Shaved cabbage with jalapeno cider vinaigrette, bread and butter pickles, and Worcestershire Tabasco aioli. Here's how Eric Donnelly explains this burger. A lot of my initial cooking background was in elevated Southern food, such as jambalayas, etouffee, dark and rich roux, and red-eye gravy, which is featured on this burger. The honey jalapeno slaw plays well as a balance to the deep barbecue flavor of the red-eye gravy. Bread and butter pickles, well, I can't even say the name of pickles, seemed appropriate here, and a little sharp white cheddar to add more tang as
You know what
well.
I say about basketball writers?
What's
Coddled
that?
their entire lives, never developed food taste.
Oh, wow. Well, so I'm very excited to try this. I'm
He's a
headed there on
foodie.
Friday.
He likes Benedict's.
What? Like, if you're not into Burmese
One time
food,
I had Mike's Hot Honey on his pizza.
if you know, I had Mike's Hot Honey on my Pagliacci on my, I believe it's the Diavola last week.
Oh, it is. I think
Oh,
the Diavola might
top-notch.
be the best pizza at Pagliacci. In our search for SpawnCon, search for Seattle's
Again,
best slice.
I am ready anytime, and you name the time, you name the place to do a search for Seattle's best slice.
I think doing a search for Seattle's best slice and only including one pizza company
No,
is
but
just
that's
as
the point. Is
we're
the
searching for Pagliacci's best slice. I don't want to
Yeah.
call
Okay, fine.
it.
We can talk about the name of it.
I'm fine with that, but we're doing it. I am fine with the idea of our level of corporate sponsorship. I'm not sure if I'm fine with that level of SpawnCon.
Wait, hold on. What is the Pagliacci cauliflower seasonal?
Do we like that one or dislike that one?
Oh, we like that one.
Okay.
We're into cauliflower.
Oh yeah, you're a foodie. Cauliflower on his pizza.
This is so dumb. Yeah, the pancetta cauliflower. That's what I thought it was. The other one is the mortadella. That's a new one. I don't know what to think here.
You
Mortadella
probably should
and
think that it's great.
it's an interesting pizza topping. And it comes on the side with pistachios that they recommend putting on. So I am curious to try it.
God, they have pistachios in their kitchen now.
I think they'll be isolated from everything else. That's why they're on the side. With that, it's time to get to the Seattle Mariners. No takes this week, right? You
Well, I
have a
think
take.
before then, we should do trade grades.
What grade have you come for me to trade? Grade.
Seattle Sonics acquire Brent Berry from the Chicago Bulls for Hersey Hawkins and James Cotton.
So the thing about this is, first off, we love Hersey Hawkins. Absolutely. Third Pelton brother, Hersey Hawkins.
That's right.
Weirdly, he's been on the pod and Brett Berry hasn't. Come on the pod, Bones.
Is
But
he still working for the Spurs or somebody?
he is not working for the Spurs because he's an assistant coach for the Phoenix Suns.
Oh.
So Hawk at this point was age 32, going to be 33. I guess he had not dropped off in 98, 99 as much as I thought he had, but shot only 31% from three that season. Got dropped from the starting lineup by Paul Westfall for Rashard Lewis, is a 19-year-old rookie for a period of time. Did still
Playing
play a
two
lot of
guard.
minutes. Yeah.
People in those days literally did not understand the sport of basketball.
So I don't remember exactly what his contract was. This was a bit of a salary dump by the Bulls because they had signed Brent Berry to a big contract as a free agent. But he was at that point in the post Michael Jordan era. They had signed Brent Berry to that big contract to literally really replace Jordan in the starting lineup. But at that point, he was 20. Yeah, he was 28 years old. I don't know why am I, no, he was 27, about to be 28. So he's 5 years younger and someone who had played at a pretty similar level to Brent Bear to Hersey Hawkins in the past. Swapping those two guys and getting 5 years younger was a pretty enormous win for the Sonics. I would probably say that was an A, even if we didn't necessarily know that he was going to become Brent Berry 3-point champion in his second season in Seattle. Shot 40% from three every single season he was in Seattle. Added point guard duties at one point. I mean, one of the great heists in Sonics history.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And what do you rate it for the Bulls? You still have to grade it for all teams.
I'd say it's probably like a C for the Bulls. Like,
It is basically just a salary dump, but they didn't realize how good Brent Berry was going to become.
right. They dumped a salary that turned out to be great.
Okay. We'll be back with more.
throughout the pod.
Yeah.
All right, the Mariners opened Cactus League play last Friday.
Oh, you said we're not doing takes.
You're not doing takes, right?
No. But
Okay.
I did want to say, I'm just before we talk about Cactus Lake, I've seen so many things. We're heading to spring training, people talking at the Mariners. The only thing that people say about the Mariners nationally, sometimes locally, is how little they've spent in the offseason. And I am here to say it is such a fucking uninteresting angle to talk about. We know. We understand who the Mariners are. We get it. They didn't spend as much money as we would have liked them to the last two off seasons. I still don't fully buy that there was some particular deal that was out there that the Mariners didn't do that they should have. I mean, like maybe you could have found one 2 years ago that worked out. A lot of them are hindsight bias. And in the moment, again, the signings of Jorge Polanco and Mitch Garver, who are both going to have monster years in 2025, we didn't think they were bad moves at the time. We thought they were good moves at the time, generally, right? We felt pretty
We
good
did.
about
I think a
those
lot of Mariners fans were pretty skeptical.
going into the season. But at the same time, there are so many other moves that the team could have made that would have been absolute Fs, right? For the payroll long term. They probably could have signed Alex Bregman this offseason. It's a lot of money. It's a pretty big risk to have signed Bregman to that deal. And again, like, could the team be spending more? Sure, they could be spending more. And I always ask, where? Like, to me, the number one thing that the Mariners have done wrong is not sign enough hitters. It's that they haven't developed the hitters yet. That's it at this point, right? That's not how baseball teams are made, by going out and signing players. And it is just not interesting to talk about. It is not a compelling argument to make anymore. Greatest pitching in baseball, greatest starting rotation in baseball, but they don't spend, so who knows? Like, we get it. Find a new angle on the Mariners. It can't just be they don't spend, therefore this team will be bad. We're about to start playing games, and they have one of the best projections in baseball. That's it.
And that's why your angle should be Goose Gossage's Wikipedia page. Anyways, Mariners three and
You agree with
three.
me on this?
Yeah, no, I think
I'm
it's very
so
repetitive.
sick of hearing about it.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. It's like Ichiro was bad. We know. God, stop talking about it. Every time he's nominated to the Hall of Fame.
Three and three so far, although, and they scored double-digit runs in four consecutive games, but most of that damage was being done by minor leaguers. We've gone
I'm
to
so far
regulars.
from Mariners baseball that they weren't even on the rundown. Do you remember that? The
Oh,
Mariners
yeah.
weren't even on the rundown
Oh, I'm
like
well aware.
3 years ago, and now we're talking about their spring training record through six games.
Don't, we're not going to pay too much
Please.
attention to that. Mariners signed Rowdy Tellez to a minor league deal, very much in the Mike Ford, Dan Vogelbach vein. Hit 35 home runs for the Brewers in 2022 with a 306 on base percentage, but the power has dropped off the last couple of years with just 26 combined home runs across nearly 700 at bats between the Brewers and the Pirates, with minus one WAR in that span. But he hit a 432 hit home foot home run
Hello.
today, so.
There we go.
Do you want to know the terrifying truth, or would you like to see Rowdy Tellez sock some dingers? I know
There we
which
go.
one I'm answering. All right, the other thing we need to talk about from Mariners spring training. I don't know how much attention you've been paying to this. The Andrés Muñoz changeup is, that's actually the storyline now. It's not the Mariners being cheap. I'm a little concerned it might be getting overhyped. I don't want it to be like the start of Major League Two, a movie which the listener may not be as familiar with as you and I are.
All-time classic.
Where Wild Thing Vaughn unveils his new off-speed pitches, and they do not turn out to work so well.
I was going to say, are we sure that Rowdy Tellez is that much worse than Carlos Santana? And I'm going to answer my question
the
with a yes.
yes. Yeah, so there's a reason I did not include Carlos Santana as being in that vein. All right, there you go.
But I've always liked Rowdy Tellez.
I mean, I do have a hard time getting past the fact that he looks like the ex of one of my close friends. Like, he looks very similar to that person. So, but I don't want to hold that against Rowdy Tellez, obviously. Seattle Kraken.
Wait, what? Oh, the Andrés Muñoz change up.
Oh, we're going to skip over the
Anytime,
Kraken again,
anytime.
aren't we?
No, please. Anytime that there is a new pitch in spring training that somebody has unveiled, I'm gonna have a very healthy amount of skepticism about it.
I think that's the right way to approach it. You know what it's like to me,
He's not that old. I thought Andrés Muñoz was a little bit older than he is. He's only
no, he can
26.
definitely add pitches to his repertoire. It's just, I think of it like anytime a 7-footer, like especially an international 7-footer, shows up on a college roster and people are like, oh man, we finally got like a big guy. And it's like, there's a reason he's playing here and not somewhere better. That's always my level of skepticism. So that's where I'm at with Andrés Muñoz.
You get a piece of it, I'll let you name it.
We'll let you complete that quote on the Discord. All right, Seattle Kraken beat reigning champs Florida 2-1 to begin the second half of the season,
Hello,
but then
we're
dropped the
back.
last two games of the road trip by a combined 11-3 score. They're now off until returning home Saturday versus Vancouver. Jordan Eberle, good news, did return from the rare pelvic injury he suffered in November that sidelined him 4+ months. So good to see him back on the ice.
I did. I want to. Maybe this is a question for you. Maybe this is a question for somebody who knows a lot more than you. I was thinking last season I wagered on before the playoffs on the Rangers to
And
win
then
the
you
Stanley
became a
Cup.
lifelong Rangers fan.
Yes. Yeah. I'm down there. I'm just like screaming at Shesterkin or whatever. You know what I
That's how
mean?
you fell in love with Kaapo Kakko.
But yeah. But this year I was like, I should do the same. Rangers, not really in the. I mean, they're not far from the playoffs, but not a team that I would probably bet on to win the Stanley Cup. I was looking at odds for this, and I, somebody who understands hockey better, will probably know the rhyme or the reason of it. But the Caps have the most points in the league, right? And I think they were still right now plus 1200 to win the Stanley Cup, way less than teams who have a lot less points than they have. And maybe this is a thing. I know that this is a thing that happens in hockey, like the best team during the regular season, if you win the Commissioner's Cup, is that what it's called?
I don't think they have it. Do they have a specific name for it?
First off, everybody has a name for it. The NBA doesn't, do they?
No. That's why no one cares about the regular season.
Maybe they should think about it. Maybe they should give a name to the winner of the All-Star game. It's a thought. Just trying to fix things. But so I was like, does this make, should I just be putting down money right now on the Caps? Because they're clearly the best team in the NHL at the moment, at least by points. Are you seeing this also?
No, I'm not looking at this. I'm looking for what the name of it is. A President's
The
Trophy.
President's Trophy. Yeah. People do care. Like, it's an important thing to win.
No, I mean, people care a lot about the NHL regular season. They shouldn't because the playoffs are a complete crapshoot, but they
Are the
do.
playoffs a complete crapshoot?
I mean, they're not a complete crapshoot, but I'm sure you're more likely to win as the number one seed than the 8 seed, but they're a lot less deterministic than the NBA playoffs. Let's
So, do
put
you
it
think
that way.
that's why the odds are, you know, like Edmonton and Florida, I think, have the best.
But I don't know what about like what causes those other teams to have better odds. Like if they've had injuries during the regular season, that team people think they're going to be at full health for the playoffs. That's beyond me.
That was the thing where I was like, I literally after was like Googling cap like Capitals injuries and stuff like that, and I didn't find anything. I mean, maybe the well, Ovechkin's not even really that big of a part of the team right now. Like, I think they'd be fine without him. So, anyway, that's the thing that we're going to follow as we head toward the playoffs. Whatever team I start cheering for.
Oh, I look forward to it. It's a
Yeah.
recurring segment. Well, the team you're going to start cheering for
Unless they
tonight.
lose in the first round.
Yes. The team you're going to start cheering for tonight is Seattle Sounders FC,
Hello.
who complete their two-game aggregate series in CONCACAF Champions Cup play against Antigua, having traveled to face Antigua last Wednesday and coming up with a 3-1 win in their first game of the 2025 campaign. Paul Areola opened his account just minutes into his Sounders debut, teaming up with fellow newcomer from FC Dallas, Jesus Ferreira, to score the opening goal. Antigua equalized in the 24th minute, but the Sounders took control after halftime, with Pedro de la Vega scoring a golazo from the edge of the 18 in the 61st minute, and Albert Rusnak giving the, I wrote the storm here, the Sounders a cushion coming home with the third goal in stoppage time. Rusnak entered that one in the 67th minute. He's coming back from injury. So the teams complete the series tonight with you in attendance. Away goals is a tiebreaker in CONCACAF Champions Cup play, so a 2-0 win would not be enough for Antigua to win the aggregate series. They would either need a 3-1 win that would force extra time or by more than that. So 4-2 would do it, or 4-1. But suffice it to say, Antigua's going to need a pretty amazing game.
Okay, next trade that we have. You're trying to move things along. Seattle Supersonics acquire Sam Perkins from the Los Angeles Lakers for Doug Christie and Benoit Benjamin.
Getting off Benjamin's contract was certainly good. It's like, and I mean, part of it depends how much you thought of like the Sonics should have pushed harder to sign Doug Christie, but I'd say probably a B for the Sonics, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. And the Lakers at this point were like, they're not really rebuilding, but they should have been rebuilding. So getting, you know, a 1992 mid first round pick for Sam Perkins, I think was probably worth it for them. So I mean, I'd have to look at the contracts closer, but I'd say like a B plus A minus for the Lakers.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, I don't think people thought that Sam Perkins was going to be as perfect for the Sonics as he was. Like, he didn't really shoot threes that much in LA. He did a little bit, but that was mostly a George Karl encouraging him to shoot threes thing.
So he was kind of a more traditional big man when he was in LA.
Which, like, he's, yeah, I mean, he was shooting 17% from three up to the moment that he was traded to the Sonics in his career. He had gone. I mean, he shot him again occasionally. I think he might have made the three to win game one of the 91 NBA Finals, if I recall correctly. But he was 95 of 381 in his career, which off the top of my head is not a real good percentage. And then he shot 38% in Seattle. So.
And in a much higher clip, right?
Like much more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, he goes up to shooting like 3 to 4 game
Yeah.
after that.
Yeah.
So he basically got here. And do you think it was because of George Karl or because of
Oh, 100%.
the scheme left him open?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, yeah, I mean, he had to kind of play outside because Sean Kemp was the post player. You know, you didn't have that same kind of interior force when he was playing with Vlade Divac necessarily. Like, Vlade Divac was more comfortable at the high post. So there was an element of that, but yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone looked at Sam Perkins in 1993 and said, oh, hey, this guy's going to be an amazing 3-point shooter.
Okay. So it worked out well, but the process wasn't as good.
I mean, maybe Bob Whitsitt saw it. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But I'm saying if I would have been greedy it from the outside at that time, I would have been like, probably selling a little low on Doug Christie here. Probably should have just signed
Wow.
him, even
Okay.
though it was a win to get off of Benoit Benjamin's money. All right, so Sounders drew their MLS opener on Saturday 2-2 against Charlotte despite a brace from Jordan Morris. They rotated the squad to some degree between the two legs of this CONCACAF Champions Cup, even with the big edge. But Morris started this one, scored the opener in the 19th minute. Charlotte equalized in the 35th, and Morris put the Sounders back ahead just after time halftime. They maintained that advantage into stoppage time, where Yaimar Gomez Andrade was on the wrong end of an own goal to split the points. Despite a major advantage for the Sounders with 18 shots, 8 on target, Charlotte, playing without Wilfried Zaha, who we talked about as their big addition last week, had just one on target. It was 1.7 XG for the Sounders to 0.9 for Charlotte, according to MLS's calculations. Sounders will head to Salt Lake this Saturday, so we'll see what kind of squad they end up bringing.
Okay.
Seattle Reign FC closed the Coachella Valley Invitational with a 1-1 preseason draw against Angel City FC. They played without six regulars on national team duty, and their lone goal in this one came from rookie Matty Dalian. So good to see Dalian get a goal. A little bit of Seattle Storm news. I had no inside information, but I did mention this is a possibility on last week's pod. They ended up bringing back Katie Lou Samuelson is a free agent on a 1-year contract for slightly more than the veteran's minimum. Samuelson signed to a 2-year, 355K contract by the Indiana Fever last offseason, coming out off missing the 2023 campaign to give birth. She began the year as a starter for the Fever, but lost the job after shooting just 35% from the field. Samuelson did shoot an acceptable 33% from three, which is the big thing she's going to provide the Storm. The Indiana then bought her out earlier this month. Her best WNBA season came in Seattle in 2021 when she shot 46% from the field, 35% from three as a starter at small forward. The Storm then traded her for her former UConn teammate, Gabby Williams, whom she'll now join in Seattle. Still some things to sort out with the roster, but I think, you know, particularly with the number two pick, but I think Samuelson projects as a backup four with Jordan Horston's injury, although the positions are going to be pretty interchangeable between Gabby Williams, Samuelson, and Alicia Clark, all of whom can play multiple positions.
So Keanu Samuelson, in your perspective, was basically like the last player out there.
I mean, there's a couple of other players of note out there, but not a lot. The pickings are pretty slim by this point in free agency.
Okay.
So I think it's a totally reasonable move from all perspectives. You know, women's basketball, a good week for them. They get 28 points Thursday on 6 of 9 3-point shooting from Elle Ladin and 22 points on 10 of 14 shooting, 8 boards and 3 blocks from Delia Daniels, with Hannah Steins adding 16 points, making 4 3-pointers, 7 assists, and an 83-65 home win over Rutgers. And then Sunday was one of UW's better wins of the season, a 21-point road victory over a Nebraska team one game ahead of them in the Big Ten standings. Ladid had 28 points, Daniels 21 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals. They held the Huskers to 42% 2-point shooting. Another big win for the Huskies as they wrap up conference play. They could tie Minnesota in the standings and secure the tiebreaker with a win Wednesday in Minneapolis. The Golden Gophers started 16-1, but with just one win over a top 50 opponent, and are 4-7 since then. Then Huskies back home for Senior Day Sunday against Oregon. The Ducks won 68-67 in Eugene and have assured their first above 500 conference finish since 2021-22. But this is a very winnable game at home for the Huskies. Their leading scorer is Deja Kelly, who hit the game winner against UW, but has a dismal 0.437 true shooting percentage overall. The result's not as good for UW men's basketball as they dealt with their own bubble for the Big Ten tournament. I went out to this one last Wednesday against Rutgers to see a pair of projected top 5 picks in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. Huskies were up one with possession in 10 seconds left in overtime after forcing a turnover by Harper, but then threw the inbounds pass directly to Rutgers' Jeremiah Williams, who was fouled by Great Osabor to prevent giving up a possible game-winning score. Williams split the two free throws, but Osabor fouled out, and Rutgers got possession after a missed second free throw. Harper did miss badly to force overtime. Huskies scoreless nearly 3.5 minutes to start OT. Still didn't have a chance to tie it with a three on their final possession, but Vazumana Diallo missed the tying attempt, and that was that. What stood out to the you from watching this game? You did watch this game, right?
I did. It was the end of the season. That was it. The
I
lack of
mean,
offense without Great Osbor, in particular.
if they had won in Iowa, they could have maybe not been the end of the season, but
That was the
it was a
real end of
tough
the
blow.
season. But these two, I mean, losing both was pretty much it.
Yeah, you
I will
called it a
say
must split last week, and you were right.
the game against Wisconsin, I saw 0 seconds of. You can talk about it. Didn't see any. Don't know what
Ooh,
happened.
that's zero as many as no, I guess that is fewer. I saw about 30 seconds of it.
The season's over at this point.
Just to talk about the prospect part of it, Harper had 34 points on 9 of 18 shooting, 12 of 14 from the foul line. Like, there was a moment where I was like, Rutgers is kind of in trouble here, and you kind of need Dylan Harper to make his presence felt. And then he immediately took over the game. So it wasn't
Is
a perfect
he
game, but
a less big prospect, or is he their biggest prospect?
he's their biggest prospect.
Okay. I mean,
People
he's
are.
awesome, obviously. Like he is an awesome player. But just in overtime, like I think the Huskies win that game if Great is there. The
I think so too, yeah.
unforced errors that they had in this game, it was they're too old of a team to be making the kind of mistakes that they're making. You know, we went through this a couple weeks ago that basically, they have two players of any relevance who could come back. You know, it's going to be a brand new team next year. And I think that's the frustrating piece of it. I believe in Danny Sprinkle overall. I believe in the class that he's bringing in, but it's just a little shocking how the unforced errors that they make. I mean, the inbounds play that ended up basically, you know, sending this game to overtime. Like they should have won. And they. And like Zoom Diallo just cannot run the offense. It's a matter of fact. Like they have to run the offense through Great to be able to do anything. And in that overtime, they could not find offense anywhere. I thought they were maybe going to score 0 points.
I continue to remain impressed by Mekhi Mason, and he eventually fouled out in this one. The Huskies were really in trouble then, but he actually was on the court for that scoreless streak, I think the entire part of it before he
But
fouled
that's
out.
not what Mekhi Mason does. And they have
I
too
agree.
many players. Like the point of the team, it's designed to be the offense runs through Great in the high post generally, right? And then all of these other players play off of him. But I get it. It's college. You're not afforded that many pieces. You know what I mean? Like if you're UW, you're not afforded as many pieces as you kind of need to be a successful team. And if you're Danny Sprinkle and you're coming and you're restarting the whole bit, but they don't really have. Was DJ Davis out?
He was dealing with an illness.
Okay, because that was the thing. I think if they have DJ, they probably win. They needed another guard, and like, I really like Zoom, but
I mean, they were
I just.
playing Chase Butler a lot of minutes. Christian King was on the court in overtime.
Yeah, when Christian King came in, I was like, well, that's it. Does Zoom have any NBA interest at all?
It was a tough showing for him, I think, in some of the All-Star games last year, but I think down the road he certainly can change that perspective.
I'm not sure what he is, if that makes sense. Like,
I think
what
he's
is
still
his.
evolving into what he is, but obviously he's got to shoot better.
Yeah, I mean, if the Washington Huskies.
The Huskies actually are not that bad a shooting team overall. They
No,
are an above average shooting team.
they actually are a mostly fine shooting team. Like, they're not as bad as some of the previous teams. And they have so many players who can. They have a lot of players who can shoot
It's mostly
overall.
Mekhi Mason and Tyler Harris. DJ Davis shoots a lot at an average percentage, but I mean Tyler Harris is at 49% and Mekhi Mason's at 42. That's pretty
I
good.
like again, I like Tyler Harris a lot. I like Mekhi Mason also, but the reality is without DJ, it was Zoom Diallo. He has to be something different than he is. And
And that's just going to happen over time. I mean, he's a
is it?
freshman who's being asked to, well, maybe not here, but I think it probably will happen somewhere over time.
It's really basketball is such an interesting sport. The world is such an interesting place. How about that? That Zoom Diallo can be like one of the best, I don't know, 1,000 basketball players on earth, probably a little bit more than that. 5,000 best basketball players on earth. Would you agree with that? And there's no place for him to go long
Oh, there's
term.
what do you mean?
Maybe there is a place for him to go, but I don't understand with the
What
skill set that
you
he
do if you're
has.
one of the best 1,000 basketball players in the world, but not one of the best 500, is you go make a lot of money in Europe.
And I think that's probably it. But like, he's not quite a good enough finisher. He's not a very good distributor, and he's not a very good shooter.
I mean, he's also 19. I just like I think what you forget is that the Huskies that you really remember fondly, with the exception of the guys who were NBA stars, they weren't playing, 30 minutes a night at point guard as freshmen. Like when Lorenzo Romar had it rolling, the whole point of it was that you didn't have to play those guys that much. They got to develop.
Yeah.
So,
I think no, that's true. I mean,
I mean, Abdul Gaddy was unquestionably one of the 1,000 best players in the world, like one of the great G League careers ever. We had a running joke in a group chat a few weeks ago about how, like, between Gaddy and Conroy, the Huskies have had, and now Jalen Noel is probably going to go down as a major G League player, like claim to fame. Lots of great G League guys, but
cool.
he was splitting time off the bench when he was a freshman, like he
So
wasn't
where does
running
Zoom
the
go then?
show.
If Zoom isn't in Seattle, where does he go and how do you develop into that player?
I don't know, like. Arkansas, there's 1,000 places. Like, do you think he's dramatically worse than Keon Manyfield was as a freshman?
Well, where's Keon Manyfield now?
Well, Keon Manyfield appeared to have some issues going to class, so he's now in the G League.
It's I think
I
the
just think
skill
your
set,
expectations are unfair.
it's I think it's a really I get it that you get to college. The way that it goes is everybody's a scorer in high school, basically. And it's so much easier to score in high school than it is at college to
Do you
get to the
remember how
rim and to
excited you
finish.
were about Corin Johnson? Like,
Kind of.
he wasn't as good as Zoom Diallo as a freshman. Just didn't have to play as much.
And then you get to college, and it's way harder to do those things to be able to score at the hoop, and you have to be able to develop all these other skills, right? Unless you're one of the best players in the entire world.
Mean,
But he's being expected to do too much with that.
do you know that Eric Stevenson was on the roster of the Washington Wizards, not for the game you attended. They had signed Federal Way's own Jalen McDaniels by that point to replace
I
him on
saw
a
him play.
10-day contract. But
Jalen. He's Jaden's brother?
yeah, he's the
Okay.
older brother. Like, Lots of guys play in the NBA.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. It's mostly just like it's
Moses
such a
Wood's
strange
probably going to play in the NBA at some
for
point.
people to find exactly what they do and to be ostensibly an at the rim finisher, which is what Zoom is. Was that what you would describe him as? Like a general scorer, right? But it is such a hard job to do. That's a hard job to do as an NBA player.
I mean, Cam
And
Manefield again as a freshman had a 49% true shooting percentage. It
th
was good
there
enough
was
to
just,
transfer to Arkansas.
yeah, I mean, no, I mean, Zoom probably should transfer at this point. Like,
I don't know if he should or he shouldn't.
I think he will grow into, you're probably right that he will grow into a good player, but when you can't shoot and stretch the court like that and not be that great of a finisher, it was just, it was just a little bit like, I wish there was more. I wish there was some other piece here that they could do because there was nobody on the court. And Zoom did his best, but like there's nobody else on the court who could make offense in that moment.
Yeah, I think that's a coaching issue, not a Bazumana Diallo issue. So those guys did lead much of the way on Saturday in Iowa City, but the Hawkeyes slowly built a lead down the stretch, scoring 52 points after halftime. Peyton Sanford had 27 points, 9 boards, as Iowa shot 10 of 21 from three, including 5 of 7 in the second half. Mason had 19 points, Osabor 15 points and 11 boards. DJ Davis returned from illness to score 17. And then the Huskies never competitive in Madison in their final true Big Ten road game. Badgers opened up a double-digit lead midway through the first half, didn't look back, making 68% of their two-point attempts. Osabor led the Huskies with 11 points. So now the path to the Big Ten tournament is hard to see. Huskies need at least 2 wins for their final 3 games, may need to win out with Iowa securing the tiebreaker. Realistically, they're not going to do it. It would be shocking if they did. That's the miracle run we've been reduced to, is just to make it to the Big Ten tournament. Huskies are home Saturday to take on Indiana, which will see Coach Mike Woodson retire after the season. Hoosiers dropped 5 straight to fall in 5-8 in conference play, but have since won 2 and 3, 2 of 3, beating Michigan State and Purdue. It's the return of a couple of players we're familiar with: Heck Ed, Arizona transfer Umar Ballo, and Washington State transfer Miles Rice. UW softball, we mentioned the no-hitter. They went 3-2 overall in the Mary Nutter Classic, losing to BYU and Cal before beating CSU Northridge 11-0 in 5 innings on Monday. Jaden Glab had 4 home runs over the weekend, giving her a team-high 6 for the season. They start the Outrigger Invitational in Honolulu Wednesday night, facing Howard Jackson State and host Hawaii. Let's wrap up with the Seahawks, who are in attendance like everybody else at the NFL Draft Combine this week. Do have some off-season news, I
I
would
think
say.
before then we should talk about the Seattle Supersonics acquired Detlef Schrempf
Yeah,
from the Indiana Pacers
you've avoided all
for
this content in 1 week.
Derek McKee and Gerald Patio.
I loved this trade at the time. Were there not any draft picks involved?
I don't think so.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Derek McKee was a very frustrating player to watch. I think this was one of those trades where both teams ended up really happy with it. Detlef Schrempf was not a Larry Brown guy, and Derek McKee was not a George Karl guy, and they both found their right spots, which is amusing because those are like, I don't know if they played together, but they're both part of the Dean Smith tree, both ABA guys, but had very wanted very different things in basketball players. I would say a straight A for the Sonics on this one. Pacers, I probably would have graded like a C on this one, but again, when you look at what they got out of it, with McKee as a part of those teams that made extended runs, got to Game 7 of the conference finals in '98. I think Derek McKee would still have been around by 2001 when they play, or yeah, 2000 when they played the Lakers in the finals. Like, both teams were happy with this trade, but getting Detlef Schrempf and his efficiency was a huge win for the Sonics.
All
All right.
right.
So the Seahawks, the one move they've actually made so far is they restructured Leonard Williams' contract by converting $18.7 million in base salary, basically everything he was making above the minimum, into a bonus, and then added 2 void years, reducing his cap hit from $29.1 million to $14.1 million. But even with that, despite the cap coming in higher than expected at $279.5 million, Seahawks still $6.5 million over per over the cap, fourth most of any team. They'll need to get under by the start of the league year on March 12th. Tyler Lockett probably going to be a part of that. John Schneider was very non-committal when asked about his future in Seattle at the Combine. Some other takeaways from his media availability said that he was going to meet with Geno Smith's reps in Indianapolis, then was asked if the March 16th roster bonus date that Smith is due was a deadline for an extension and said, no, he's got another year. We expect him to be our guy, but we want to do what's right too. So basically, the Seahawks are not going to pay Geno Smith whatever he wants, but still sounding very much more committed to him than they were this time a year ago heading into the combine.
He's getting an extension.
It seems very likely.
I still think they might draft a quarterback, but he's getting an extension.
Yeah, I mean, certainly they might draft a quarterback at some point. I don't know that it's going to be in the first round.
It's not going to be in the first round. Not, I don't
Schneider.
know. It will not be in the first round.
I'm not willing to rule it out on the any chance rule.
Okay. It's to the any chance rule, though.
Yes. Schneider also confirmed a report that the team moved back Uchenna Nwosu's guaranteed date, calling it, quote, part of a negotiation, presumably restructuring Nwosu's deal. But of course, the only reason you'd move back the guaranteed date is if you were considering cutting someone, right? What happens at that point, which I'm not sure what the new date is, but 6 million of the 14.5 million base salary for Nwosu is currently guaranteed only for injury, but will become fully guaranteed at some point. So we will see. Again, on the flip side of it, if you're Uchenna Nwosu, the only reason you agree to push it back is because you'd rather come up with a restructured deal than go out there and hit the open market and be released. So certainly signals mutual interest on both sides, I guess, in a new contract of some sort. So didn't you really hear a lot about a DK Metcalf extension? I think that's obviously the other big thing we're watching as we head into the Seahawks offseason. But a relatively quiet, I would say, combine for the Seahawks so far. And then that's probably about the right way to what we would want to see. Are you like searching for other trades to grade here?
We have to do one more. Dale Ellis. Sonics acquire Dale Ellis from the Dallas Mavericks for Al Wood.
I mean, part of the problem is the farther back you go, the less I understand the contracts and things of that nature. Dale Ellis wasn't playing a lot in Dallas. They were extremely deep. This was Rick Sund had put together. There was a story about this on the Ringer last week as part of their expansion week. They kept fleecing the Cleveland Cavaliers out of draft picks, which led to the Stepien rule that you have to have a pick in one of the every other draft.
Wait, we were the ones who did it?
No,
Oh,
Rick
my bad.
Sund did it with the Dallas
Rick
Mavericks.
Sund was the one who did it.
So they had so many picks, basically, good players, basically. The Dale Ellis was coming off the bench, had only played 15.1 minutes the season before, but he'd averaged 7.1 points in those 15 minutes. It seemed obvious that he had some additional potential, and Al Wood was kind of a journeyman type, I would say. I guess he had played more than I realized for the Sonics. He averaged 11.6 points per game, but he went to Dallas, barely played there, and did not play in the NBA again after the 86-87 season. So I don't know. This actually was such a minor trade. I'm not sure that I would have spent much time on it. I might have just said, given it a B on both sides and called it a day.
You don't do that, do
Let's see. Al Wood's advanced stats, I don't think, were very good, but then probably so were Dale Ellis's, weren't very good at that point either. He had been 1.2 VORP in 84, 85, so that's something. Still, like, you'd call this now the second draft, because the Sonics got him in basically what would be the last year of his rookie deal, the former number nine pick. So, yeah, maybe a B plus or an A minus for the Sonics. I was a bigger fan of. At the time, I mean, obviously I was four when this deal was completed, so I don't remember it, but I was very excited when the Sonics traded for Dale Ellis in 97. It was a move I had proposed. I wanted them to bring back either Dale Ellis or Eddie Johnson to add some shooty off the bench. And Dale Ellis came back and led the league, I believe, in 3-point percentage in 97, 98 as
There we
part of
go.
an overachieving Sonics team.
Okay.
So there you go. On that note,
Thanks for listening.
there's always more trades to grade. So I read the media notes every week to update my injury database. And my single favorite media note is they have under Milwaukee Bucks two-way guard Ty Washington Jr., that he learned the importance of sacrifice by watching The Last Dance. Never once before had any coach thought to mention to him that maybe you should try to like not score all the points you can for the good of the team. But then he saw The Last Dance and it all clicked.
That's actually hilarious. This was in response to me saying that I've said this before on the podcast that like the any threshold of anything is enough to be interesting if you're a pro athlete. It's like this person's a real movie buff. He's seen Step Brothers.
Know why that's
That's
funny.
always what it is.
Also, by the way, do you think this doesn't apply to the music industry?
For musicians,
Yeah.
I do not think it applies. Well, the music industry is a much larger place that involves. In fact, no, I'm just going to say no, it doesn't. Like,
Okay.
there's no indie version of athletes. I
I
feel like
mean,
a
I
lot of the part of
suppose.
the music industry is like musicians is knowing more obscure things. That's like.
Aren't minor league players basically indie athletes? I mean,
There we go.
what?
They're just not marketed in the same way, though. Like, it's
I agree. They're very different things conceptually. I don't know that I would say that music is much bigger than pro sports, though. It just like those are both very large industries.
But what I'm talking about is the threshold that I'm talking about.
Okay.
The musicians is actually way smaller, I guess I should say, because it's almost like
Yes.
every pro athlete, they're like, well, we got to find something interesting about them.